Welcome to a new episode of PMCA Research Chat. I'm your host and PMCA Research Chair, Eric Schmoyer, from Barrichello. Our objective is to form and educate our listeners on current and previous research committee-funded topics and personalities. Please subscribe and like us on your podcast service. Check us out at PMCA.com, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
On this episode of Research Chat, we are joined by some members of the Heirloom Cacao Project. In November 2020, the research committee hosted the Heirloom Cacao Project webinar, and the event was quite a success. As PMCA pledged $5,000 a year for 2 years, we felt perhaps the membership would like an update on the goings-on at HCP, particularly with all the crazy things going on in the world. Joining me today are Ann Zazek, Bill Copeland, and hopefully Jacob Marlin may join us later. Ann Zazek is the executive director of the Heirloom Cacao Preservation Fund, a nonprofit organization with a mission to discover, identify, and preserve fine flavor heirloom cacao varieties for the conservation of biological diversity and the empowerment of farming communities. Prior to working for HCP, Ann spent almost a decade working for the U.S. Grains Council in Washington, D.C. While there, she served many roles overseeing international development programs throughout the continent of Africa, most notably leading the Council's Food for Progress program funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture with the objective to promote the development and professionalization of the commercial poultry and feed sectors in Tanzania and successfully establish the country's first national poultry association. Ann graduated from the Rochester Institute of Technology with a degree in international studies, specializing in international business. She enjoys baking, experimenting in the kitchen, and spending time with family. Ann now resides with her husband and 2 young children in Indianapolis, Indiana. Bill Copeland served in the military, where he provided critical, secure communications for major military operations. In the 80s, he worked with developing just-in-time printing solutions for corporate clients such as Boeing, Rockwell, EDS, and McDonnell Douglas. He has also been in the forefront of the 3D printing revolution and provides rapid prototyping for confectionery, aerospace, oil, and gas industries. More recently, 2 new companies were created in response to market needs not being met. The first, A Specialty Box, is a high-end specialty packaging company providing luxury confectionery packaging that allows a small to medium-sized business the ability to compete with larger competitors without the need to purchase large quantities of custom packaging. This company was one of the first to provide online ordering with products fulfilled on demand as needed. The other, WKI LLC, focused on emerging web-based communication and eco-commerce system. Mr. Copeland's presence on the Kettle Committee Board for the USA affords him the opportunity to work with top suppliers and manufacturers of confectionery equipment and products, both nationally and internationally, providing insight as to what the future needs of the industry may be. Welcome, guys. Thanks for joining us in Research Chat.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So can you give us a quick overview of HCP for those who may not be familiar?
So the Heirloom Cacao Preservation Fund was founded in 2012 in partnership with the Fine Chocolate Industry Association and USDA ARS in response to the global pressures of industrialization, environmental change, deforestation, and cacao breeding programs that focus solely on productivity, threatening the world's supply of highest quality and most flavorful cacao. So recognizing that these trees are the foundation for not only delicious chocolate, but also the livelihood of many farmers and farming communities around the world, we are the first initiative to identify and map the world's finest cacao and designate growers of these endangered heirloom varieties.
For those who may have missed the previous event, how did you guys meet, start working together? What got this ball rolling? It's probably hard to answer with Jacob not here, but I'm just curious, you guys seem to really all coalesce really well together. I'm just curious how this all started.
It's funny you say that. With Jacob not here, I think we can make up a lot of stuff. No, all kidding aside, that was just one of those meetings that you don't expect. From my personal perspective, we were one of the founding members of the HCP, which was an initiative that came out of FCIA, as Ann pointed out. And over the years, we were setting and developing all the protocols for what we were trying to achieve. Well, you know, one day we were looking for beans that we could test and, you know, for a fine flavor, heirloom, and genetics. And so Jacob came in with a sample and nobody really knew Jacob or what he was doing. And then these beans were submitted, they were roasted and turned into chocolate. And everyone was absolutely blown away by the flavor, the color, and the fact that they were a pure ancient Criollo. And that's how we met. And then from there, I really had a personal interest in what he was doing and where he was located. And it was exciting. It was like the next frontier, and I just wanted to jump in. So that's how Jacob and I became friends and why we worked together.
I know, Ann, you had come to PMCA some time ago with, I think it was a guy from the USDA, and you were involved at that point, I want to say 2 years ago.
Yeah, I started working with the HCPA about, it must be about 2.5 years ago. I started just as a consultant for them to help them out because they had recently received a grant from Penn State University that was ultimately from USDA. And as you had noted in my bio, I had previous experience with USDA grants. So I was there to help, and then it evolved into much more than that. So we visited PMCA back a few years ago with Lyndall Meinhardt of USDA ARS, who again helped start up HCP itself, was there since the beginning.
How's that relationship? I mean, I'm always curious how the USDA, do they put any parameters on you guys? Do they get in your way at all? I'm just curious because we do a lot of grants to universities and stuff, and we've never worked with them directly, but I know they do work with the universities. I'm just curious what kind of, if any, parameters they put on the grants.
No, they don't really get in the way. I mean, so the relationship with the grant at the Penn State grant, USDA grant, is separate from our USDA ARS relationship. We have a relationship. We don't have a grant association with them in regards to the genetic testing and that type of process that they do for us for our designation process. In regards to the Penn State grant that is funded by USDA, of course they have rules and regulations that you must follow, but it's not impeding on accomplishing the goal. It's just there to keep parameters and keep you in line as you roll out the program.
When you guys harvest the cacao, do you follow a standard range of processes? Do you have SOPs? Do you follow more or less traditional things with regard to harvesting, fermentation, drying, or do you play with parameters for particular ends?
So we have 16 designees around the world. They all have different circumstances. Some are single farmers, some are co-ops, associations that have been, certain trees within have been designated. And so each one has the different restrictions within them and different situations. So we do our best to, when we have programs, nursery programs that we work on with them, we do our best to make sure that we share best practices throughout, but each one obviously has to adapt that accurately to their own on the ground situation. I don't know, Bill, if you have more to add on that.
Specifically, in reference to Belize, the protocols are traditional. However, you know, box rotation during the fermentation process, the drying, everything is very much traditional, but being very careful to monitor moisture content, things like that. But the flavor is in that bean, and Jacob and his team have been able to maintain that with their process. Every procedure is documented. And there's extensive testing and basically logging everything that happens from the seedling all the way through to trees that are providing fruit.
Let me ask kind of a weird question here with regard to Belize versus, say, Central America and South America, comparatively, say, Africa, Malaysia. Is there an indigenous tradition there that differs at all from other particular regions, considering how far back this goes? I guess what I'm asking is, do they have a particular process that differs from other parts of the world?
I believe that we're using, you know, raised rack screen drying, for example, as opposed to putting the beans on the ground and drying them that way.
Right.
The process of fermentation is probably very, very similar to other locations. I'm not too intimate with how they process in Africa and some of those other places, so I really can't answer that question. I would defer that probably to Jacob.
Okay. you know, where I sit, they open the pods, scoop out the beans and the pulp, cover it with banana leaves, and let it ferment in the sun for 7 to 10 days. I shovel it into bins or onto screens, and then they dry it until it reaches a certain moisture, and then off you go. They jute bag it, and then off it goes to the collections. Yeah, I was just curious.
That's exactly the process. Obviously, okay. Times and other things will change, but that's the same process.
And another reason I asked that is I didn't know if other entities would get involved with regard to, you know, tweaking your fermentation for particular ends or flavor impact from drying and fermentation. That's partially why I was asking the question, because it seems like it would be the perfect venue for experimentation. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I do know that's exactly what Jacob has been doing, experimenting extensively with his crops and the different trees to see what happens with color, flavor. And I think in the last episode, we discussed that, or Jacob discussed that with his four unique phenotypes and
right.
What was very unusual for that particular bean.
And these are completely pure Criollo Belize beans. And again, you know, you're not blending for a certain end. You're taking what you get, and this is what you have, right?
That's correct.
Once you get to that point, I want to get into the bean-to-bar process. And again, this is probably going to be more for Jacob. But how are you guys roasting, grinding, et cetera? I'd imagine you don't have a, you know, 5-ton bar roaster. You're not, you know what I mean?
No, he doesn't. Not in the jungle yet, where he relies a lot on solar power. But yeah, it's a small roaster. I know he has changed some of that equipment since the last time I was out there. So I may be speaking out of school, but that's where he does a small batch roasting. And then he's using a winnowing system, I think, that he actually built to create that separation of the nib. At that point, I'm not sure if he is adding butter. I believe he is. I'm not sure what the percentage would be when he's going into the chocolate making stage. But it's very, very small batch because there's not enough crop yet
right.
to really do something significant. However, the trees that have come off of the, that it were planted to say even a year and a half ago are already beginning to flower, which is amazing.
I just find it in the whole process intriguing and how realistically you've got a lot of bean to bar manufacturers out there that are doing small scale production and how close what they do is to this particular process. It's really not that, I don't want to say scientific, but you don't need the top line equipment. You know, if you have a coffee roaster and a wet mill and a tempering unit, you can do it.
Absolutely.
So I took the liberty of scrolling through your annual report, and I do find it really interesting. You have this Adopt the Tree project. What's that about? How does that work? Because I think people might be interested in, signing on for something like that.
Yeah, we're really looking for creative ways to kind of drive some interest to HCP, because we not only to support us, but also just mainly to support the heirloom farmers during this, you know, crazy past year. So it's a new initiative of ours that started back in November of 2020. And it's an opportunity for people to commit directly to improving the lives of our heirloom cacao farmers and their families by adopting a heirloom cacao tree on their farm. So anyone can directly support the farmers by adopting a tree for, it's a 1-year process or a 1-year commitment. You can either pay for it in 1 year for $180 for 1 year, or monthly, $15 a month for 12 months. And adopters receive a digital adoption certificate and information card, including the farm overview, the location of your tree, and a photo of your tree that has like a little tag with your name on it. And at the end of the 12-month period, if you're monthly adopting, or as soon as possible, if you donate $180 a year one, you get 3 bars of heirloom chocolate at your door.
That's really cool. That is really cool. How successful has that been? Because I would love to get that. I mean, at the end of this interview, I'll ask for plugs and we'll put a website in the show notes. But how successful has that been?
I mean, it depends on what your expectation is. So far, we have 46 adoptions, which I think for our following is pretty good. It's definitely been a lot of work to get it set up and started, but now I think we've finally gotten into a little bit of a rhythm with it, which is good. But yeah, we really would like to kind of bring more awareness to it and get people more interested, because I agree, it's such a cool initiative. Our farmers are so appreciative receiving their donations. And so right now we only have 4 of our designees. We have 16 designees total. We have 4 of them set up with this. It is a little bit taxing on them because they have to make sure that they can go out and tag the trees and all of that. So it's probably good that it's a little bit slow start to get it going.
But I think this is a great plug for anybody who really wants to feel they're doing something with regard to deforestation, for helping farmers, for helping the industry. Just the whole big picture is fantastic. So I would suggest, you know, people should check that out and, you know, throw you a few. But that's just me. You're also doing this HCP in action, working through the pandemic with designees. Now, first question I have is, how has this pandemic affected you guys? Has it been as big a problem there as it is in the rest of the world?
You mean in Belize? Or
yes. Or the program, or the program in general.
That will be a Bill question.
Yeah, in Belize, it was somewhat devastating, to say the least. The country was closed; you couldn't go in and out, and so all of the types of educational programs and excursions that are part of the revenue stream for Be Free just instantly dried up. It just didn't exist anymore, and so it caused a challenge, not to mention that there was infections in the country. Staff had to be tested regularly. I think 1 or 2 staff members did end up with COVID-19. They recovered with no problems. There aren't any cases currently. The airport is now open, but after a year, it really impacted the ability to move forward with some of the programs that we were involved in. Jacob did the best that he could managing the employees, managing and mitigating the COVID experience with everyone, and keeping everything operational from the standpoint of maintaining the trees, the nursery, with very, very limited funds. So yeah, the impact was big and broad. It's recovering, but we're coming up with initiatives to try to generate funding again and sponsorship programs and things like that to get it back on its feet.
Good, good, good. How would you define designee? What does one have to do to become an HCP designee?
So the HCP has a submission process. There's an evaluation process where bean samples are anonymously processed and uniformly processed at Guittard. And we have an internationally acclaimed HCP tasting panel that performs a blind flavor analysis. And the panel itself is made up of cacao experts from 6 countries, each with at least 15 years, that's even longer now, experience, and have all served as professional evaluators of cacao bean flavor. And so this panel scores the beans. If they scored sufficiently high enough, then they become deemed heirloom. And then those that are deemed heirloom become a designee. So as I said a few times, we currently have 16 designees around the world, including Belize, Bolivia, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Ecuador, Tanzania, Madagascar, Philippines, Vietnam. I'm probably missing one, but around the world. And those designees are who we support through these program initiatives, like Adopt a Cacao Tree and that type of programming.
I will say that that panel is really like a who's who of the chocolate industry. And I've been doing this for almost 30 years or more. So you got quite a bunch of folks there. The small sites you do have, are they modeled on the Be Free concept? Or are they kind of, are you guys kind of laissez-faire?
No one's modeled after one another. I mean, so Be Free is HCP number 11. So they're the 11th one to be designated. There's 10 designees that came before them. We definitely try to share, like we have grant programs that we've received through private family foundations. And like I noted before, the Penn State program that came through. So we've sponsored or provided grants to 6 of our sites so far. And one of those is with PMCA as well to Be Free. And so we've shared the experiences learned and the reporting and processes that have gone through. We've shared that with other sites, but None of them are technically modeled after one another. They're their own identity. They're their own site. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, they're all unique to the point where they do have to operate independently and not model because their environments are so different.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you had like best practices that everybody does the same kind of things the same. That's what I was getting at. I didn't know if somebody went in and said, look, we got a successful plan working here. This is what you need to do to make it successful there. But it seems like you're doing a laissez-faire and as long as it works, stay out of the way kind of thing, right?
I mean, we're a designation based on the submission that they've submitted based on their own processes before we've even come along.
Gotcha.
So we don't want to mess with their processes. Yep. If there's need for support, we are always there to support in any way we can and provide any information and share lessons learned, like I said, like with the B3 program. But yeah, we don't want to step in or dictate anything that they're doing.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. And one thing interesting, if you look at B3, when Jacob submitted those beans, they just came off of wild ancient trees. He didn't even know anything about chocolate at the time. He just said, what is this? So to speak, what do I have here? And he was looking to the experts, and that's when they discovered what he really had, initially before he submitted his chocolate.
Was there a flavor difference between the legacy trees and the subsequent stuff you brought out of your nurseries?
No, the flavor profile on both of those, because of the grafting and the seedling planting, is the same. And now that may have changed since I talked to Jacob after the pandemic, but right now they were one and the same.
That's interesting because I would think if you've got, let's say, legacy pods growing, falling off the tree, reseeding, growing multi-generational trees that are old, it wouldn't be necessarily better or, worse. I would just be curious if it was different from, different agronomy practices in different locations with regard to the chocolate itself.
Yeah, I think we're going to leave that to Jacob and the science.
So you guys recently constructed a nursery in Hawaii, as well as being involved in the USDA FDA site in Puerto Rico. What can you tell us about those sites, those projects, maybe a bigger picture view?
So Hawaii is one of our designee sites. Like I noted before, we have programs at 6 of our sites, and one of them is Hawaii. It's supporting a nursery program at Kamananui Estates. It's run by Deanna Doherty and Dylan Butterbaugh. The project was supported by the Leslie Family Foundation. We received a grant from the Leslie Family Foundation to enable the construction of a nursery that allows for the production of verified heirloom cacao to plant at the KE farm site and also distribute to other farmers and researchers throughout Hawaii. So far, they've distributed 230 heirloom cacao seedlings and grafts at 5 new sites. Also at the USDA ARD germplasm collection in Puerto Rico. So this grant's allowed the first effort to multiply and help preserve heirloom cacao in Hawaii.
What kind of volume of bean are you looking at and how is it distributed? Do they process it at site if possible? Do they send it to you guys? How do they make the bars, process the beans, that kind of thing? If you've got a bunch of different sites, how is that handled? Making the chocolate.
Everyone does their own. So on our website, there's a Buy Heirloom Cacao link, like on a top tab. And that's a link to all of the chocolatiers, chocolate makers, retailers who sell heirloom cacao. There are certain designees have produced their own chocolate, but then there's also who are bean to bar, but then there's also some who produce the beans and they sell it to chocolate makers to make bars. HCP itself does not sell chocolate. HCP itself does not handle any of the beans. We are simply here to designate and support those farmers in their own unique process.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay. So you have the Rare Cacao Discovery Program. What's the footprint for this? Is it going to be global or just Central and South America?
We're in the very beginning of it. It's a 2-year program. Again, it's another program that's supported by, it's a grant that we received from the Leslie Family Foundation. And we're in the very beginning of it, which is the first half of it is a deep dive research phase where we're doing a deep dive into past cacao discovery efforts surveying all existing literature, reports on the topic, connecting with cacao industry professionals, identifying any gaps in research and where there needs to be future expeditions to locate it. So overall, the objective is to unearth cacao trees that are unique in flavor and genetics, map and document them for future preservation and scientific research. And if appropriate, we will support in any type of post-process harvesting or processes or anything like that. But overall, this is the HCP becoming more actively engaged in not only identifying and supporting the preservation of fine flavor cacao, but also actively engaging in locating and cataloging them. And so in this research phase, we're unlimited. The footprint is worldwide. But when it gets to the expeditions, we're really going to, for at least this program, we're going to be focused in Central and South America. And then hopefully in the future, we can expand beyond that limit.
So how can people get involved, make a donation, get chocolate, or learn more?
Our website is a key place to find all of the things. So HCP, we don't have a membership to sustain our funding. We solely rely on donations. So that's why these individual donations and this adopted cacao tree is so important to us. Truly, every dollar seriously counts. So you can head to our website, which is hcpcacao.org. Also follow us on social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can follow us along there and learn more.
I think that's important to highlight that you guys are really doing the best you can with what you have, and you're doing a heck of a job. Big chance to plug. Anything else going on with you guys? I know I've had the chocolate when you came to PMCA, and it was quite an interesting chocolate. But yeah, anything else you guys want to plug at this point?
Well, I would say that if you want to learn more about what Be Free is all about as a totally biodiverse environment, you could go to Be Free. It's BFREEBZ.org. And then from there, you can learn all about the educational programs, the research programs. You can learn about the different species that are there. There's a donate button if so inclined to help them during COVID. And I'm sure that you'll enjoy it because it's pretty amazing. It's like stepping back 6,000 years where there aren't any people and you're in a true pristine environment. It's absolutely unmatched.
I always find it interesting when Jacob talks about his herpetology experience and his interest in snakes, et cetera.
Well, the Hickety Turtle Program is one of the only breeding programs in the world. And that's happening right on site, right on property, which is amazing. Wow.
Anne, you were going to say something?
Sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to benefit both, Be Free is actually one of our adopted cacao tree farms. So you can adopt a cacao tree from Be Free. And then in the future, when you feel comfortable, you can go visit your tree at Be Free.
That's great.
I like that. That's what I'm pushing for here is to get your name out there. So yeah, feel free to donate and check out the website. It's quite interesting. And what they have going on is really quite an organization. Again, today we've had Anne Zazek and Bill Copeland from HCP. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
This has been another episode of PMCA Research Chat. Please subscribe and like us on your podcast service. Check us out at PMCA.com, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.